Judge Gabriel, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You'll be joining the state Supreme Court in September. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Did you ever have that as a goal or something you'd hope to achieve throughout your career?
Well, not growing up. I grew up on Long Island to a working class family, and never in a million years would I have thought I would have ended up from there to here. My father worked behind a deli counter in supermarkets. My mom was a self-described housewife. There were no lawyers in the family. I was a driven kid and motivated. We struggled in my family for money. It was always a difficult issue, so I wanted to create a better life. My parents wanted me to have a better life than they did. Somewhere along the line, I thought, you know, being a lawyer would be a successful, good thing to do.
When the governor announced your appointment, he talked about your strengths in the business community and some of the cases you've worked on. Could you highlight some of that aspect of your background?
Sure. When I first got out of law school, I worked for a federal judge in Baltimore. Then I joined a large firm in New York where I did basic commercial and business litigation. I then joined the firm that was Holm Robertson Owen, that's now Brian Cave, here, where again I did business litigation and intellectual property litigation.
I understand you represented Michael Jackson. Talk about that case.
Yeah, that's true. Michael was sued in Denver in 1992 by a woman from Denver for copyright infringement. And the case involved a song called Dangerous. The woman had a song called Dangerous, and my firm got retained to represent Mr. Jackson. That was a particular pleasure for me to work on that case. I happen to be a professional trumpet player, and I've been playing the trumpet for 44 years, so to get to work on a music copyright case was fascinating for me, particular one of that profile. We tried the case in February of 1994 and did win the case.
Did you personally meet Mr. Jackson?
We met Michael twice, once at his deposition and once right around the trial time. He was a tremendous witness, and is a kind of person, I think this might surprise people, you realized immediately that this was a genius. You're in the presence of someone who is a musical genius.
Now you're serving on the Court of Appeals. What are some of the big challenges there, and what have you enjoyed about this position?
What I've most enjoyed about being on this court is the collegiality of this court. Anyone who knows anything about the law knows it's not always the case in courts where judges are collegial. We work together. We work very hard in this court. Our docket is very high. We decided as a court something on the order of 2,200 cases last year. There's not a whole lot of breaks for us as the first-level appellate court and frequently the court of last resort, seeing all manner of every kind of interesting case you can imagine.
For the listener, can you just list off a few?
Every kind of crime, with the exception of death penalty cases, which go directly to the Supreme Court, we see. The ones I remember, I suppose, are the hardest ones. I had a very difficult case involving rent controls in Aspen. It was difficult because of the procedural setting in the case. I had a case involving a young man in El Paso County who, because of his religious faith, could not have a blood transfusion, and he was diagnosed with leukemia. And the question presented was, can a mature minor make that decision to refuse life-saving treatment?
What did you guys decide?
In that case, we ultimately decided that the trial court did not have jurisdiction to decide the issue. It was a procedural thicket.
How many hours a week would you say you work?
My wife will probably say I short-circuit this, but I work very hard. I would guess around 70 to 80 hours. I take work home pretty much every day and every weekend. The volume of reading is extreme here.
Is it hard when you are dealing with such, you know, sometimes life and death and really emotional, tough cases to separate that when you leave the office?
No, I think you have to learn how to separate that out. We have to take an objective eye on these cases. It's also enjoyable, frankly. It's the challenging cases that drive me, which frankly is one reason I decided to apply for a position on the Supreme Court.
A nonpartisan judicial nominating committee comes up with three final candidates, and you were one of those three, and the governor chose you. What was that process like?
I'm a big fan of our merit selection system in Colorado. The way it works is you fill out a fairly lengthy application that goes to this nominating commission that's nonpartisan. They work exceptionally hard based on my experience. They call references. They call your opponents in cases if you're a trial lawyer. In my case, they call litigants who appeared in front of me. And the majority of the commission are non-lawyers. And I frankly find the non-lawyers' questions to sometimes be much more interesting and difficult than the lawyer questions. They ask questions about what was the biggest mistake that you've ever made and how did you deal with it. Then the governor does an extensive due diligence process, which again is fascinating to watch close at hand to see how hard they work. They solicit comments from lawyers all over the state. Both of the other nominees here were very good friends of mine, and they are superb. And to be selected, I suppose there's a little bit of luck in that too, given these quality of people.
You are a registered Democrat. How are you able to separate out politics from your job?
It's not an issue at all. My approach to any case is to figure out what the rule of law is or the rules of law that apply, and to try to apply those rules to the facts presented in the narrowest possible way consistent with doing justice. My goal really is to get it right and to do the best I can.
Do you think that there is a change in tenor around the country when it comes to judges? I know judges are typically seen as nonpartisan and separate from politics, but then when we have the U.S. Supreme Court, and obviously some of those tough decisions are political in nature.
There are two different ways to look at that. First, in terms of the U.S. Supreme Court, there's a perception that their cases are frequently political and 5-4 decisions. Historically, that's not actually the case. If you looked at their complete docket, the highly sensitive social issues tend to get a lot of the press, and those are sometimes, or maybe even frequently, 5-4 decisions. But many times the court decides unanimously. So I think there may be a misperception based on the nature of those cases. The other thing that affects politics or the view of politics in our system is the way we select judges. Colorado is a merit selection state. In other jurisdictions, they elect judges in partisan elections. I've got to be careful talking about making political statements, but that creates certain issues, like judges raising money to campaign in a partisan election where perhaps they run as a member of a certain party. As a criminal defendant, you're sitting in a courtroom where a judge has run on the grounds, I'm going to be very hard on criminal defendants, and you're a criminal defendant. That at least raises some concerns.
To end on a philosophical question, do you think there's a difference between justice and fairness, and how do you equate those two?
Justice and fairness go hand in hand, in my view. I suppose you can view justice narrowly as applying rules of law, and sometimes that comes out with a result that doesn't strike someone as fair, but I suppose the flip side of that is we have to apply rules of law fairly and impartially to all, and that, I think, is what results in equal justice. So to me, I have trouble separating out the two. I think when you apply the rule of law equally and impartially to everyone, you get equal justice and you get a fair result. Now, is the law perfect or are judges perfect? No. We're human beings and we do the best that we can.
Thanks. That was Judge Richard Gabriel. He will become Colorado's newest Supreme Court justice.
It's a pleasure to be here with you.
I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.